Okay, so what I thought I'd do is to give a bit of a legal framework, because there hasn't yet been civil litigation in the UK against a company or a business for having trafficked or exploited and harmed individuals. So this is something that I'm keen on bringing. And so I'm going to share with people in this room what my thoughts are in terms of establishing a framework, what there is already, what there isn't, and then to take that forward. So in terms of human rights norms, and I'm sorry, I missed the introduction, so I apologise if I repeat anything, but in 15 minutes I'll try not to. But of course, Article 4 is the starting point. Under UK law, the Human Rights Act 1998, classifies Article 4 as one of the convention rights. That means it's directly justiciable in the UK. That means that any public company that acts in breach of Article 4 could be taken to account in the United Kingdom. And the question then arises as to whether or not private companies could also be litigated against under Article 4 alone. I now want to just move into to Section 71. Now, Section 71 didn't exist before 2009, and what we know was that 2003 was the Sexual Offences Act, Sections 57 to 59, which criminalised trafficking for sexual exploitation. We then had the Section 4, Asylum and Immigration Treatment of Claimants, etc. Act in 2004, which criminalised trafficking for exploitation per se. That was to include labour exploitation. There was a gap in the Section 4 offence, insofar as somebody could only be criminalised for conduct which they committed in the United Kingdom against a trafficked person if they had first trafficked that person into the United Kingdom. So that was a problem. Now, I brought a case in 2008. This was before Rantsev, and so it was entirely novel at that time. It was against the Chief Commissioner of the Police. It was called Patience's case. Now, in Patience's case, she had been a victim of trafficking into the United Kingdom before December 2004. December 2004 was the bite point of the Section 4 trafficking for exploitation offence. So therefore, her trafficker could not be investigated, charged, prosecuted, convicted under Section 4. The argument that I brought was a public law challenge against the Commissioner of Police for the Metropolis, so the Met Police, to say that he had failed in his positive obligations under Article 4 to adequately investigate the trafficker, notwithstanding the absence of a criminal law provision. I said that she had been falsely imprisoned, she had had her passport stolen from her, she had received assaults. The Chief Commissioner of the Met settled the claim. It wasn't a confidentiality agreement, and therefore I can talk about it. And it was transformative because it became the crux case behind the campaign for the Section 71 offence. So Chief Commissioner of the Police accepted he'd breached positive obligation under Article 4 to investigate. A declaration of breach of Article 4 was acquired through the settlement. Damages for patients for the failure to investigate were obtained, and an undertaking to investigate was obtained. And so that then prompted an investigation of the trafficker for the ancillary offences and enabled a prosecution to be brought. So in the meantime, what was being noticed was that somebody who was a victim of forced labour just within the UK was not protected under the criminal law. And so Anti-Slavery International and Liberty championed Patience's case as being the prime example of the protection gap that existed under the UK law, using by analogy Ciliardin in France, where of course the criminal law provisions to prohibit Article 4 style treatment had been exposed as being wanting. And Lord Baroness Young of Hornsey then championed the Section 70, what became Section 71, as an amendment to the Coroners and Justice Bill that was then agreed by both houses, so they didn't argue against it, and it came into law. Now, what's interesting, and this is what most people in this room may not know, is that Section 71 applies to companies. The position, therefore, that I have, and I'm going to give a bit more detail about that in a moment, is that whereas the Home Secretary's Modern Slavery Bill was something which I was criticising on the 16th of December when I saw it, because all it did was cut and paste original offences into a format and include no protection mechanisms and other sophisticated devices such as we all around this room recognise. What I hadn't realised was that 4 months later the Joint Committee would produce a bill which actually corrupted the forced labour offence that is within Section 71, protected under the Home Secretary's Bill. Because what the Joint Committee has done is to, in a sense, conflate exploitation, forced labour, trafficking, and has come up with a variety of new offences which don't really hold tight under the UK's international obligations and domestic obligations since the direct effect of the EU Trafficking Directive in April 2013. So, for example, there appears to be no focus on a forced labour offence, which is true to the ILO Convention number 29/1930. There is no respect for the Article 4 ECHR obligations that fall under the Council of Europe, ECHR, European Convention on Human Rights. And when one looks at the trafficking offences, there is a very grave problem in terms of what is presented as being trafficking of adults and trafficking of children, whereby the trafficking of children expressly enables the irrelevance of consent, but the trafficking of an adult does not. That is a grave, grave error, in my opinion, in terms of the presentation of the offences. Of course, there is a lot to be praised in terms of the child exploitation offence and others, and other parts of protective mechanisms for victims. I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing on criminal liability of individuals, and in this context today, businesses. So coming back to my starting point about Section 71 applying to bodies, corporate and unincorporate, let me give you some direct references to this. Now, I apologise for using my own book, but I never found a better set of appendices, so I was forced with Clara and others to write it back in 2011. But at the time that the Section 71 offence was settled in law, the Ministry of Justice issued a circular, which is called 2010/07, and this was guidance to the Lord Chief Justice, President of Queen's Bench Division, Senior Presiding Judges, Clerks of Justices, Chief Officer of Police, Chief Crown Prosecutors, Heads of Division, Revenue and Custom Prosecution Office. And this is very important because it starts with elements of the offence. So the Section 71 offence consists of holding another person in slavery or servitude, or requiring another person to perform forced or compulsory labour. The circumstances must be such that the defendant knows or ought to know that the person is being so held or required to perform such labour. The offence applies to legal persons, example companies, as much as it applies to natural persons. Now, my focus over the last however long since I did Patience's case has been on different areas of law and trying to achieve, you know, movements and developments in those. And it's now that suddenly, having finally broken the record or stopped the broken record of non-criminalisation, I can now start looking at this again, and what I'm seeing is something very important. And indeed, I was instructed by the GLA over the last year in a couple of cases, and that also has been feeding into my understanding of what is going on. And what I'm seeing is that there's actually discrimination taking place in the United Kingdom in terms of victim protection. In terms of the GLA's businesses that it regulates, victims of labour exploitation and of trafficking and forced labour have more potential to be protected because of the GLA's scheme and structure than a person in an unregulated sector. So it's a direct breach in terms of the opportunity to achieve justice or protection under the law in terms of those who are outside of the GLA sector and those who are within. That's one point. The other point is that, of course, the GLA's work is regulatory primarily, and although it has two criminal offences, which is the act of acting as a gangmaster without a licence or using a gangmaster without a licence, that doesn't really take the place of a criminal provision that would effectively enable prosecution against a business for human trafficking or for forced labour. So what I'm setting as a benchmark here is that Section 71 does do that, but it hasn't yet been applied. Now, I also looked at the Section 4 offence under the Asylum and Immigration Treatment of Claimants, etc. Act, and that too is to apply to companies, but that says to companies incorporated in the UK, but at least we're looking at businesses. So the idea is that really the Section 4 offence should also be applying in terms of criminal liability to companies. Now, companies are not being advised at the moment and have not been advised that potentially they are liable already if they use subcontractors who have knowledge of the use of a trafficked or a labour exploited person, or if the company themselves has knowledge that somebody is being used. And so to that point, I'd like to just read the guidance here. So a person can only commit the Section 71 offence if they hold another person in slavery or require another person to perform forced or compulsory labour. If the labour is subcontracted to another company and the employees of that other company who do the work are held in slavery or servitude or are required to perform forced or compulsory labour, then the subcontractor is the principal offender. However, if the contractor knows that the subcontractor's workers are being so held or required to perform such labour, then depending on the circumstances, they may be liable for aiding or abetting the subcontractor's offence, for encouraging or assisting the commission of the offence. So this is very important to note at this juncture, where we're looking at modern slavery bills and we're arguing about what one contains and what doesn't. Let's look at what actually our law has already in place and seek to protect it if it is to enable there to be a level playing field as between the citizens in a state and those who are legal entities. That is right, because under the ECHR scheme, the state's responsibility would be to criminalise the behaviour of all legal persons within the jurisdiction, and legal persons being those of companies and of private individuals. So that's where I'm starting at. I'm seeing the time's already run out before I can move further, but it is a bit of a moment to stop and take stock. It's a significant point that I don't want to just brush over. In terms of what the Trafficking Convention says and what the EU directive says, there's also a significant element about criminalising the use of the goods or the services of a trafficked person. So Article 22 of the Council of Europe Convention on Action Against Trafficking in Human Beings does require there to be the sanctions for the use of the services of a trafficked person. Now, when the UK was looking at how it was going to implement the convention, because its mind has so much been on sexual offences rather than labour exploitation, what it did was to take the meaning of Section 22 as requiring it to criminalise the punter for using a trafficked victim in the sexual context. And so, in fact, the only primary legislation that was introduced by the government before the 1st of April 2009, when it implemented the Trafficking Convention, was Section 53A of the Sexual Offences Act, which was paying for sexual services of a prostitute subject to force, etc. So that was the punter's law, as I call it. Now, actually, Article 22 went wider than that, because what Article 22 wanted member states of the Council of Europe to do was to enable... for a criminal offence to be established... committed for its benefit by any natural person, including an organ of a legal person. So the idea was that corporate liability would also be ascribed under the Council of Europe Convention. Then we have got the EU directive. Now, Article 5 of the EU directive specifically... let me just take a step back. So when one looks at what Article 22 says, one can find guidance on it in the explanatory report, and it's paragraphs 247 to 251. And that very clearly tries to place obligations on directors of companies as well as employees of companies, where directors know what has been going on. And I think I've just actually, excuse me for a moment, I wrongly said it was Article 22 of the Council of Europe Convention, which was criminalising the use of services. It's actually Article 19. So it's the same what I was saying. It was just that Article 19 is criminalising the use of services, and it was that which the UK government thought was the sexual offences direction only, which it wasn't. And so there's a gap in our law in terms of the use of the services of those who are exploited and for labour or for under other forms of slavery. And then it is Article 22, which requires corporate responsibility for acts of trafficking and for the corporate liability. Then that the corresponding feature of that under the EU directive is Article 5, which requires the same, that the organs of companies are also to be ascribed to the responsibility for the Article 4 trafficking offence. And then it goes on at Article 18 of the EU directive to say, as a may, not must, that in order to make the preventing and combating of trafficking in human beings more effective by discouraging demand, member states shall consider taking measures to establish as a criminal offence the use of services which are the objects of exploitation, with the knowledge that the person is a victim of the human trafficking offence. So that's the framework of it, and a cases should be considered within that framework as being very real and very possible, and to not only then to be encouraging the police to investigate and prosecutions to be brought, but if there are not, then the potential for civil action for damages to be brought against a company, which would at the same time expose the state for having failed to adequately protect the victims of that type of exploitation under its criminal law. Thank you.